What's the film about? What's it really about? What genre does it hit? What is really being said? What's really being seen? That's what you're talking about.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 2 of the Intermission Podcast. Dodie and I kicked off this podcast last week with a celebration of Quentin Tarantino's work. We ended up chatting for a really long time and hence decided to break our very first episode into two halves. If you haven't listened to our first episode, I suggest you give that a try first before coming back here. If you're up to date, then let's get right into the Intermission Podcast. Chapter 2, or should I say Volume 2.
Like, we do know that Vince Gilligan had definitely taken some influences from Tarantino when he made Breaking Bad, the greatest television show ever made, trademark, yes. Only to be contested by Better Call Saul, which is also the greatest TV show ever made. But anyway, we'll spend other episodes where we talk about Eisenverse. But I have a question for you, Dodie. How many references to Pulp Fiction could you find in Breaking Bad?
Oh, you mean the other way around?
Since Pulp Fiction came first, the references were obviously then placed in Breaking Bad. So I know that we watch it in retrospect and that's how I noticed them. How many did you notice? I have a list of 5 with me, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's see. Just very quickly, I think one is, of course, the overdose scene with Mia. It was very reminiscent for me of the... Was the name Jane?
Jane, yes.
Yeah,
Jane Margolis. Yes.
Yeah. Jane's death.
Absolutely. I think the short haircut, the dark hair, you know, the way she dressed up, the way she injected herself, I think everything invokes Mia Wallace.
Very similar.
Unfortunately, no adrenaline shot administered by Walter White. So, rip Jane Margolis. Yes.
Correct. And one in a long series of Walter White making... definitive moves towards becoming Heisenberg as opposed to potentially coming back to being Walter White. One in those, one of those milestone moments of
probably the first big milestone moment, I would say. Some would say when he killed Crazy Eight, but
for me it was this defense. Because it had a lot more.
Yes, it was
impact.
This. I think this was the moment. Yes, this was definitely the moment.
Another I would say is Mike and the Wolf.
Yes, absolutely.
Coming to clean everything up.
Oh, yes. I definitely feel Mike Armantrout was a hat tip to Mr. Wolf, right?
Yeah.
And Mike, by the way, of course, does it multiple times in both shows.
Yeah.
He also shows up to clean up Howard Hamlin's remains. Yeah, I guess it's safe to now give spoilers for Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
All right. So we have two references spot on from Dodie for Pulp Fiction X Breaking Bad Universe.
I can't really immediately think of anything else. So,
Let's go. Okay. We'll start with a very obvious one. So the funny t-shirts Jesse and Walt wear after nearly dying out there in the desert, right? That's exactly what Samuel Jackson and Travolta do, right? After the funny situation.
Okay, so, nice. Good catch.
In fact, I would say that's in fact the most direct reference because those t-shirts are extremely kooky, right? And there is humor around those in both movies. So that's number 3. Number 4 is probably, you know, slightly contrived, but it reminded me of Pulp Fiction. The twins, the Salamanca twins, wait outside Walter's bathroom for him to come out so that they can kill him. But they get a message from Gus Fring and leave the place. But unfortunately, Butch doesn't get any SMS that takes him away. And hence, it's bye-bye Vincent Vega when he walks out of the bathroom. Aside, right? Travolta keeps coming out of toilets into terrible situations, right? This was, of course, the third and decisive one.
Mm.
But he comes out of the toilet in Mia Wallace's house and finds her ODing.
OD.
He comes out of the toilet in the diner and
he's
in the middle of
a
standoff. And this, of course, is one of the philosophical, cosmic, whatever it is that Tarantino is trying to say in Pulp Fiction. Because Samuel Jackson takes the signs very seriously, right? Once the bullets miss, you know that he becomes a man of God almost and whatever. Travolta, in fact, keeps downplaying the whole thing, saying that, shit happens, sometimes bullets miss. And it's almost like, you know, he didn't take the sign seriously enough and that's why he ended up dead, right?
There
you go. So that's, that's number 4. Now, number 5. For me, this was the clincher when I saw Pulp Fiction. Now, in the scene where Butch comes back for the watch, right, and he runs into Marcellus Wallace, they go into that place, Marcellus is taken captive. There is this guy, you know, a sex slave, BDSM slave, who is chained to the ceiling in an armor. And you remember who from Breaking Bad was chained to the ceiling and made to work as a slave? Jesse Pinkman. Right, towards the end of the show. But it doesn't end there. Butch could have gone away, right? He gets away and he had a clean shot at going with the watch. And Marcellus was going to die, right, for sure, over there. He decides to come back and save Marcellus. Much like Walter White decides to come back and save Jesse. He didn't have to. He didn't have to, right? So there you go.
Nice. That's number five. I would push back a little bit on that reference. I mean, on that interpretation that he decided to come back to save Jesse. But I need to rewatch to...
He does, by the way, because I rewatched Breaking Bad recently. So what actually happens is Walter White comes back to kill Jesse and to kill everyone right out there. And then when he finds out that Jesse is being treated the way he is, and this is where Walter White's soul gets that little bit of redemption before it dies. He throws himself on Jesse's body to save his life and takes a bullet, literally the fatal bullet that kills him.
So, what I'm saying is it's more of a reactive choice than...
It is a reactive choice.
He did not plan to come there with all of that, with the intention.
Absolutely not. In fact, he came angry about Jesse because he finds out from Badger that Blue Meth is back on the streets and he knows Jesse's alive. So, in fact, he is angry with the Nazis for having not killed Jesse because that was the promise they gave him. Anyway, so that's Pulp Fiction X Breaking Bad universe.
Nice. Well caught. Well caught. The entire wolf sequence. Wolf works great. And I feel Quentin's stuff just doesn't work in that scene. I mean,
he's so bad.
Such a bad actor in that particular scene. I've seen him in other movies. He's not that bad, but this one...
No, I fully agree. He's not so bad in Reservoir
Dogs. He's just unable to, even match really the level. It's still, like, the rest of it works because they have this, they bond over the coffee and the laundry and all that. So there's this nice little buddy comedy happening in the corner where he's spraying water and they're both laughing and all of that. But Quentin's...
Don't tell me it's good coffee. Yeah. I know it's good coffee. Yeah, I got it.
But he gets so happy because when the wolf has a sip of the coffee, and he's talking to those two. He turns around and he nods. And Quentin's like, okay, this guy's the man. I mean, Quentin's character is like, this guy's the man. He appreciates good coffee. Finally, not like these Philistines who are in my house. This guy really understands true stuff. But his acting is so atrocious.
Also, by the way, the wolf doesn't do any work. By the way. He just shows up. He doesn't do it.
Thought leader.
He orders these guys. He's a thought leader, exactly.
Best example of a thought leader. But Quentin's acting in that sequence really brings it down, in my opinion. That struggles so much because he's just not able to hold on to what he's trying to do there.
That makes Tarantino the K.S. Ravi Kumar of Hollywood. So he's the director who cannot help himself from casting himself, much to the detriment of his own movie. K.S. Ravi Kumar famously showed up in an item number for Kamal Hassan in Das Avataram to be linked in the show notes. Anyway, go on.
Okay, something that I want to talk about. So Quentin Tarantino, he's very much fashioned as a student of cinema. There's this famous quote where he says...
I didn't go to movie schools, I went to the movies.
Yes.
Is that the one?
When people ask me if I went to film school, I tell them, no, I went to see movies. And, he worked in a video store. He calls that his biggest education, where he just sat and watched every... VHS that there was. In fact, he worked there with Roger Avery, who is the co-writer of Pulp Fiction as well. I think that's where they started. I mean, obviously, he peppers all of his movies with different kinds of references, calls back to moments in other movies. And some of them I get if I've seen the movie before or I'm somewhat aware of the actor or the particular storyline. Some of them, of course, are more... I would say esoteric references, or at least what I call references for references' sake, in the sense that I don't have any more emotional attachment to some Shaw Brothers Hong Kong cinema scene because I have no idea who the Shaw Brothers are. So that's fine. That's what it is. But one of the things he started doing after he came to prominence is that There was a series called Quentin Tarantino Presents. And when I say series, I mean it was a series of DVDs. So he would lend his name to genre movies from across the world being released in the US. And he would record a little intro and right. He would talk about... So he would do promotion for these movies as well. And it's through that I found Wong Kar-wai, for example, one of the great Hong Kong directors. Somebody who very quickly became like my favorite as director. And even when he doesn't do as much now, but even when the COVID shutdown happened, I for some reason decided to go back and revisit all of his movies. He hasn't made movies in a while now, but I went and revisited all of his older movies. So Wong Kar-wai is one that I'm really thankful to. Quentin for even introducing me to him. And the other big one is Bong Joon-ho. Quentin used to talk a lot about Bong Joon-ho and really promoted his movies. And I would say right now, Bong is probably among my top three favorite directors. The way he writes, the way he directs. And we'll probably do a couple of episodes on him as well later. But I just wanted to play a little video right now of Bong Joon-ho's historic win at the Oscars a couple of years ago with Parasite. This was his... I mean, he's been slowly gaining prominence in the last few years internationally, but it was really Parasite that broke through all of that. The year he was nominated is the same year that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was also happening. So he was literally up against Quentin, right? So I want to play this little clip from one of his speeches.
저의 영화를 아직 그 미국의 관객들이나 사람들이 모를 때 항상 제 영화를 리스트에 뽑고 좋아했고 했던 우리 퀸틴 형님이 계신데 정말 사랑합니다. 예.
When people in the US were not familiar with my film, Quentin always put my films on his list. He's here. Thank you so much.
Quentin, I love you.
No, yeah, that's pretty cool. I didn't know this, by the way.
So that was Bong talking about literally thanking Quentin in his speech and saying, I love you. I'd go on a bit of a side conversation about Bong Joon-ho for a bit. That particular speech, if you watch it in its entirety, this is Bong Joon-ho, another true student and lover of cinema. He comes on stage. He's beaten Martin Scorsese. He's beaten Quentin. He's getting a standing ovation and he looks straight at Martin Scorsese and Martin's standing. And he just like looks at him saying, oh my God, what's happening? Why are you standing for me? Right. And then he starts talking about Martin Scorsese, about having watched his movies as a young man. And, you know, he references a quote from Martin as well, saying that which is the most personal is the most creative. And in the middle of his speech, he gets the audience to do a standing ovation for Martin Scorsese.
Okay.
You know, and Martin stands up and he's like, okay, fine, everybody, like, sit down, please. This is not about me. But that's Bong Joon-ho for you, right? I love the fact that his speech, and he gives it over to standing ovation for Marty, gives it over to, you know, Quentin, I love you. Talking about everybody else. And of course.
Pity. So what did you do for Maniratna?
Maniratna, what about our one and only Mr. Kamal Haasan?
Oh, talking of Kamal Haasan, I think we should mention the Kill Bill anime sequences were inspired, of course, by Ala Vandan, also known as Abhay, where in order, by the way, so interestingly, Kamal Haasan used the anime sequences in that movie because he wanted to depict a lot of violence, right? It's literally Kamal Haasan chopping up Manisha Koirala is when this happens in the original movie. And you had to slip that scene past the censors. So tongue-in-cheek. Yeah. Take there to cartoonify it. In fact, in the movie, he also makes a veiled reference to how there is more violence in cartoons today than in, you know, regular action movies. And Tarantino saw this and was inspired by it to use it in Kill Bill. And this came to light because of Anurag Kashyap, who apparently spoke to Tarantino when Tarantino mentioned, hey, yes, I saw this idea in some Indian movie where they'd used, you know, anime action sequences. Yeah, talking of Kamal Haasan and Tarantino, there's another, probably not even a reference, but something that I was reminded of. Mm-hmm. So, in Inglourious Basterds, right, there is the scene with the entire Nazi high command watching the the movie, right? The propaganda movie that they made. And it's actually interesting to see Hitler reacting to scenes of, you know, his soldier shooting down hundreds of Jews, right? He's laughing, he's ecstatic, and I don't know, comically stupid is how you would describe it, right?
Yeah.
So there is a scene in this Kamal Haasan movie called Anbe Sivam, where so the villain's henchman, which played interestingly by Santana Bharati, who is close aide of Kamal Haasan, so he is in the cinema hall and they're watching Anaconda, right? And there is a scene of and this is the gory end scenes of Anaconda where the big snake is, you know, catching and gobbling up human beings midair, and suddenly you have Santana Bharati roaring in laughter looking at the scene on screen, and everyone around him is looking at him. I was vague. And it's similar for more reasons, because in both these sequences, both in Inglourious and in Anbe Sivam, the actual action is happening in the projection room. Shoshana meets Zoller, they end up killing each other in the projection room. In this movie, Kamal Haasan is meeting the girl in the projection room while the movie is playing out there. So anyway, I was reminded of that. I have a trivia question for you. Can you name the most recurring character in the Tarantino universe? And hint, this character is not a living person. You could say it as a character of its own. I mean, as the wolf says, you could be a character. It doesn't mean you have character. But this one has character, right? And in some of the movies, it just appears. In some of the movies, it gets out.
I think I know what you're talking about. I don't know if I'll get the name right. The cigarette brand? Red Apples.
Yes, the Red Apple cigarettes. Well played, Dodi. You're a genius. Yeah. So the Red Apple, I didn't even realize this until I saw the Red Apple show up in for the second time. I don't remember where I noticed it. I think I noticed it in Hateful Eight.
Oh.
It has an entire, it is there in pretty much every movie of this. So the biggest play it gets, of course, is in Once Upon a Time, where in the last scene of that movie, DiCaprio acts in an ad for the Red Apple cigarettes, and then even says, who smokes this shit, right? He's the only person in the universe who doesn't like it, but Mia Wallace smokes Red Apples. The bride walks past a big billboard.
That's why
boarding for the Red Apple. It also is seen in the pocket of one of the bastards, apparently. It's popping out of the pockets. It's a very thin reference over there. What's his name? Honey Bunny and the other. Yeah, so they're smoking Pumpkin. Red Apples as well in the opening sequence of Pulp Fiction. Pumpkin and Honey Bunny.
Oh, sorry, no. Honey Bunny is Pumpkin.
It's Honey Bunny and Pumpkin. So they're smoking Red Apples as well. So, recurring theme. Interestingly, his girlfriend at the time, Mira Sorvino, was in the movie with Lisa Kudrow. I forget the name of that movie now. And that movie
Romy and Michelle's High School Days.
Romy and Michelle. I was about to say Blended. But Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion. So that also has Red Apple advertisement that they walk past. That even has Big Kahuna Burger, apparently. So Four Rooms also has a reference to Red Apple. So I must quickly talk about Four Rooms, right? So it is it's inspired by a story by Roald Dahl. It's basically someone challenges another person to do something 10 times on the trot without failing. And if you do it right, you get my car. But if you fail, I take your finger. That's the premise. And Tim Roth plays the bellhop in the hotel who is called to chop the finger off in case things don't pan out. Right. So that's the movie. I don't want to spoil it for you. Fantastic set piece. Famously shows up in a Rajini Kamal movie called Ninaitale Nikum. Actually, that's where it came first, to be honest, before Tarantino did it. So Rajinikanth's famous cigarette flick into the mouth, right? So Purna Vishwanathan challenges him to do it 10 times on the trot in Ninaitale Nikum. He does it 9 times and then he chooses to withdraw before doing it the 10th time because he doesn't want to lose his finger. And Purna Vishwanathan tempts him with the keys to his Toyota car, except he calls it Toyota car. It's very funny. It's an amazing sequence also to be shared in the show.
Okay, so I just shared a clip with you. Can you describe what this was?
All right. So actually, what Dodi just sent me is Quentin Tarantino explaining to someone about how Top Gun is the greatest story ever told, because it is about one person coming to terms with his homosexuality, and that being Maverick himself. Can't go into the details. We should share,
we'll share the link
in the show.
But yeah,
But this is special because Dodi and me have been talking about Top Gun and watching Top Gun. I think Dodi has been watching Top Gun for pretty much most of the time in the last 6 months. What is the count at, Dodi? How many times have you watched?
I think it's at six, all in IMAX.
Yeah. Okay, so I've watched it three times, once in IMAX, and three times is the most I've been to a cinema to watch a movie. So
yeah,
it's
I'm proud of you.
For me. But you hold the Dubai level record for this. The
world record. But I'm definitely proud of you for having watched it multiple times. But I just thought this would be a great clip to kind of bring all the... So even though we've spoken mainly about QT, we managed to touch Breaking Bad, we managed to touch Top Gun, at least it's in the zeitgeist right now. What we haven't touched upon a lot is Quentin Tarantino and his, let me just call it his big mouth for walking into controversies. He's no stranger to controversies. He's had a lot of conversations on gun violence and the impact that it has and whether violence on screen influences violence in real life. It's a murky subject, but he's spoken about it quite a bit and gotten into heated discussions even within interviews, walking out of interviews at times. He's also most recently in, I think it was at Cannes for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where somebody asked him a question about Margot Robbie's role as Sharon Tate and saying that you say the movie is kind of about her, but she has close to zero dialogue in the movie. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah.
And Quentin responded with this line, and he says,
"Well, I just reject your hypotheses."
Like, and he refuses to answer. He goes, he leans back and puts his arms up, and then, and you can see Brad Pitt in that video. I think he's just not looking. He's like very studied. I'm not involved in this conversation, you know, calmly, not trying to escape the conversation, but he's just very calmly like, oh, this is not my conversation. And then Margot Robbie jumps in and she says, look, it was a great thing to play. Oh, blah, blah, blah. It became a thing for a while where I would, well, I just reject your hypothesis anytime you get into an argument with somebody.
Yeah. Put your hands up.
Yeah. All right. So that was largely our conversation on Quentin Tarantino. We just wanted to, like Nitin said in the beginning, a lot of podcasts are basically WhatsApp conversations turned into audio. And that's the idea here as well. We're just trying to bring our conversations to a different medium, and hopefully it's something that somebody else might enjoy as well. So for the next episode, we're not really sure when we're going to do it. Maybe in a week, maybe 2 weeks. We were thinking of either talking about Maniratnam's magnum opus, Ponniyin Selvan, if I'm saying that right, Nitin.
Okay, you are.
Part
you are.
One.
Yes.
We might want to talk about The Woman King as well. That's about the Dahomey Amazon, or as most people might know them, the Dora Milaje from the Black Panther universe. But we might even want to talk about something else. So we'll figure it out and we'll come back hopefully in 2 weeks.
I'm just glad that you listened on for all this time. It is great to have you listening into us, and we hope you will continue to listen to us in the future as well, because of all the podcasts in all the apps in all the world, you dear listener walked into ours. Thanks for that, and we shall take good care of you.
Okay, please listen to Bits and Pieces, the cricket podcast that Nitin hosts with a bunch of other luminaries, and Nitin is also back to writing about cricket, and he had a very impassioned discussion about Deepthi Sharma's run out. Don't say Mankading, Nitin. Run out. The ICC officially calls it run out.
I'm just SEO optimizing.
Fair enough.
But yeah, sure.
So yeah, he's been writing for moneycontrol.com, and so have I. I've written a couple of articles on the Emmys. Just recently started writing, and my review on Don't Worry Darling is going to come out there probably this weekend.
Yeah, I look forward to reading more about Don't Worry Darling there. And we are also on Twitter. So the name of the podcast is The Intermission, and we are Your Intermission at Your Intermission. Yeah. And I also am on Twitter at Nitins, that's K-N-I-T-T-I-N-S.
I have a dormant ID that's sitting there. I'm at Naren Dodi, N-A-R-E-N-D-O-D-I on Twitter. Come say hi. Let us know if you have any feedback.
And say hi, do share feedback and let us know what you would want us to talk about. Okay. This is episode 1. We promise to bring you more. So I'll be back as well, Dodi.
Thank you, Nitin.
Thanks, Dodi. That was fun. Bye-bye.